and I live at 868 Southwest Liberty Bell Drive in Aloha, Oregon. Representing Bowman's, heard that several times. But I'm in a peculiar position. I built my testimony that I wrote on 2520, 2 and 1, and haven't seen number 4.
Well, you should be. So, we'll have copies. We should have copies over on the desk, and if we don't, we'll certainly.
Well, I went three times trying to find them, and there was nothing there. But let me digress from my testimony a little bit. Leave it as it is. There's a couple of comments. Thank you. Anyway, let me.
You want me to put you on last and let you read those for a few minutes?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Sure. Call Howard Hansen.
My name is Howard Hansen. I'm a mobile home owner. I've been the owner of that home for 16 years. I live in Gresham, Oregon, at 3200 Southeast Palmquist Road, space number 16. The first time I heard of the citizens representative of Pam Collins was today when I met her. I am one of those at the present time that have run out of patience and have been involved in litigation. This occurred when we had the last rent increase at our park, and the services and amenities that I bought on the way in have totally vanished. There's been no maintenance on it. And in fact, when the owner of that property died in 1980, there was no more maintenance done in the park other than weed cutting and a few things like that. We presently went through a five-day trial in Portland. It turned out adversely to me, and at the present time I'm under a FED type judgment from the court to be moved out of the park, moving my home by the 31st of July. That's 90 days. I was amazed in going through the court. First of all, the judges are not familiar with the landlord-tenant laws that have anything to do with mobile homes. They readily admit that, and yet they sit on the bench and they call the shots in this court. Obviously, we'll be going to the appeals court, but again, I think the necessity of having someone who can intervene in these disputes for mobile homes is imperative. In my travels through the courthouse and in being down there, I noticed they have landlord-tenant mediation, not for mobile homes. This is for apartments. We have your rights as a mobile home tenant. None of those are any good. They're statutes that unless we take them to court and actually try them and win, those are just statutes and we have no use for them. They have all of these tenants' rights handbook on evictions. And in each instance, it goes in there and goes into detail as to what can happen if you're in an apartment and so on. And in each instance, it says mobile home, subsidized housing, and public housing, you have important additional rights. There's no indication of what those rights are. They take you into small claims court and they give you all kinds of information there. But again, it doesn't pertain to manufactured and mobile homes. We were blessed with some additional statutes in the last legislation, one of which indicates that prior to an increase in rent that the landlord or a representative of the landlord would discuss the rent increase. We find that this has been totally ignored, and in my particular case, even the court said that the legislature should have been more specific when they said discuss, because they didn't know what the word discuss meant. And I thought for a learned judge sitting on the bench, that was a little bit of an affront to myself as a mobile home owner. But I would like to encourage the legislature to look into these problems. And again, we have many of them out there. Myself as president of a mobile home park association there and a district director for OSTA in Multnomah County, I am constantly out at different parks that are in the process right now of collecting the funds to bring lawsuits against the park owners and their managers. And it will be more prolific all the time because we have not been able to get their attention. They are continuing to stonewall this thing. We're losing more and more services and amenities every day. And my rent, since I've been gone in there in 1971, has gone up 315%. The CPI in that same period of time has gone up 115%. So the in this particular park I'm in, the profit on that alone is what I think is unconscionable, and especially when they continue to increase the rent, take our services and amenities away. And I appreciate your time this afternoon. I'll cut this short. I know it's getting late in the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee. I'm Philip Peach, representing the Oregon Mobile Home Park Association. We are obviously opposed to the bill, both in its original form and in the Dash 4 amendments that are before you today. In checking early on when the bill first was introduced, one of the first things I did was contact the Ombudsman's Office or Citizens Representative Office to the Governor and learned that figures for just last year, for example, total complaints or inquiries received of any type were 4,189, approximately 20 of which were from mobile home park tenants, and most of those were related to the closure of the three parks in Washington County, and that comes to about 0.5%. I think the way to go about this is to publicize the office. We've heard from a lot of people who apparently didn't know that that office existed. Pam Collins has indicated today that she is going to at least one legislative district with a couple of representatives to publicize the fact that the office is available and to see how those discussions work and to report back to the next legislative session if any changes in the law are needed to bring about resolution of disputes. I suggest that that is the way to approach this, not as the bill in its original form would be, to create a special mobile home park ombudsman, which I believe at this point would be unwarranted and redundant. To speak briefly to the amendments that are before you, I guess I'll start with the least of our concerns and work up. Certainly the access to any mobile home park without notice is a threat to the privacy and security that are expected by mobile home park tenants. Really one of the main reasons folks live in mobile home parks is to have some kind of a community or secure or private atmosphere. A number of tenants were kind of alarmed last session to learn that one of the clauses in a bill that was passed, House Bill 2915, required access by anybody who wanted to go door-to-door canvassing tenants within a park for tenant association activities. A number of tenants immediately began putting signs in their homes saying no canvassing or soliciting. Even for that type of activities, they didn't want to be bothered. So there certainly is a security aspect that is expected by a lot of people who don't want just anybody roaming around with statutory authority to do so unannounced in their parks. The bill goes on to call for the citizen's representative to determine if disputes are subject to ORS 183.413, which is the administrative rules hearing process. I think that we would run into some real legal problems here. The citizens rep office, as you heard today, is not a statutory position. It was established by executive order, and I feel there'd be real problems in having that position determine whether or not it is appropriate for certain disputes to be subject to the administrative rules hearing process. And I don't think that for that particular office to make those determinations would be appropriate, perhaps not even legal. The other problem we have clearly with the administrative rules hearing process is that it simply circumvents existing legal channels, and in our council's opinion, the way it's worded would seriously threaten the applicability of existing remedies throughout ORS Chapter 91. really what it amounts to is an added layer of legal bureaucracy. You've heard today that some services in a park have been decreased. That is illegal. You've heard of retaliation. That is illegal. Those types of things are illegal, and if it takes legal action in the courts to receive judgments, and if tenants do not have money, that is one of the functions of legal aid, to be involved, and I know that they're very involved in those kinds of problems.
Can you give us four or five examples of where legal aid has brought a lawsuit on behalf of a mobile homeowner?
I believe they... No, I can't specifically, and I don't know which parks they've been involved in recently, but I'd be happy to get that for you. I suggest legal aid would be the more appropriate one to check with on that, but I'd be happy to contact them as well.
The only reason I ask is because you made the assertion of a fact that apparently is true, and I would think that anybody that comes before us and makes those assertions would have something to back it up.
Well, one of the problems we have is that it tends to be from non-member parks, and they are hesitant to talk to me. I'm involved in discussions primarily with member parks who have heard of incidents like that. The incidents against our member parks tend to be less often. So I guess I'm saying that we are good operators, and if there are some bad operators out there, they don't tend to be members of the trade association.
So you're telling us that by hearsay, you have heard some of the members of your association assert that there have been lawsuits brought against non-member owners, and that legal aid has done a great job in representing those tenants, but you don't know that for a fact.
That is correct.
Thank you.
To continue with my remarks, another section in the proposal before you would allow any dispute to be submitted by two or more tenants. The way it's worded is, disputes involving only one tenant shall not apply for purposes of the subsection. I would suggest that that would simply result in a lack of control over what kinds of disputes would be submitted, and I think you'd see a little of everything being submitted, from how the grass was cut to what have you, and I think you need some kind of clear-cut method for what types of disputes are submitted, and I would suspect that the appropriate way to do that would be for disputes to be submitted in writing by a majority of tenants. As far as the issue of whether they would be afraid of doing that or not, confidentiality of those types of complaints is guaranteed in the amendments before you. Again, calling for an arbitrator, that is something which goes along with my other comments. Clearly, we do not feel that is justified. We feel it circumvents the existing due process. Withholding of rent, authorizing rent strikes, is getting into the area of rent control, and our association has had historically been on record against any form of rent control, and we believe that rent strikes are just that. I guess to summarize, there are four bills that have passed the House in the last couple of weeks, and they are all geared towards easing up on some of the tension that is out there. Just as I don't have examples, Representative, on suits that have involved legal aid, I do not also have specific documentation on the many, many stories that I've heard in the many hearings we've had here of excessive rent increases or service decreases. I think it's equally important to have all of those documented, and I would be happy to do so in joint fashion with the Tenants Association, because I'm just as interested in resolving cases of abuse or excessive rent increases, should they exist, as I think the Tenants Association are. In any event, the four bills that have passed, I think, need a chance to work and should ease up somewhat on the tension out there. Those are House Bill 2258, expanding the definitions and allowing for protection of more classes of older RVs and trailers and so on in mobile home parks. 2259, which we were delighted passed by a pretty good margin in the House, that will require local governments to allow more easily the siting of new mobile home parks. And I believe that we did not want to be a monopoly. That is, more competition exists and more spaces are out there and a healthy vacancy rate, that there will be more incentive to have better rapport between landlord and tenants and keep rent increases to a minimum. House Bill 2260 on individual mobile home siting. And finally, as you know, we've agreed to House Bill 2265 to make it required that a year notice be given for park closure. Currently it's 6 months, and to allow compensation for relocation costs in any closure less than a year. I think those are all significant policy changes. I think they need a chance to work. I think the bill before you today is not warranted. It's a bit of a drastic step. The existing position should be given time to work, and let's review it next session. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Norton.
Thank you, Chairman Hanlon, for the respite. Take a look. I would like to make a couple of comments about...
If you would, for the purposes of the tape, reintroduce yourself.
Reintroduce myself.
Also because I enjoy it so much, Mr. Nord.
Thank you, Representative Bob. I'm Bud Nord, Vice Chairman of the Mobile Homeowners Association, and speaking for them at this point. In this 2520-4, I'm agreed with most of the previous speakers in this line 14 that has to do with, on page 1, that has to do with inspection without notice of the premises. If that term premises means the dwelling of the tenant, I certainly would not accept that at all. Our association would be definitely against it. I also resist the, we also resist the idea of a pilot program. If this method is good enough, it should apply to the whole state. Now, Lori Skillman quoted a figure, for example, of vacancy rate in the Multnomah County, Washington County area as 3%. My figures show less than 1%. And this is one of the major problems in confronting residents of mobile home parks. I might give you a little information as to how mobile home parks are bought. Now, several times the out-of-state buyers have been mentioned. They look for areas like Oregon where there is no control on the rent situation, basically. So they come in and buy a park and then figure from the beginning that they're going to raise the rent enough to make their mortgage payments, or a good share of them. This comes under the heading of examining the profit structure of the park before that, and how much they can cut out of purchase costs and things of that kind. And bear in mind that also that we are not of the idea that we're going to refuse a legitimate profit to anyone. If they're in business, they've got to have a legitimate profit. But also remember that collectively the residents in mobile home parks have a tremendously larger investment in that park than the owners and the operators in the homes they own on their property. This is what's happened in, and I will cite one example. I happen to live in Heritage Village in Aloha, and you probably all have heard or saw in the papers the trauma that we've gone through in the last 30 to 60 days with a threatened rent strike, and we had one going until the 72-hour notices ran out, and everybody got scared, and so they paid the rent. In our estimation, it was an unconscionable rent increase. This was the first increase of the new owners. And we went the route under the, strictly according to the book, on the landlord-tenant laws. We applied to the owners for conferences, and the first two conferences were only with the local managers. They wouldn't get anybody from the home office. The third one, we finally got a vice president up here from the home office in Newport Beach, California. and we were stonewalled. There was no discussion, if that's what we expected. They simply took our counter-proposal, which was an amelioration of the rent increase, because we thought it was too much, and took it back to California and sent us a five-page letter telling us why they wouldn't pay any attention to it. The last conference we had with them, just before the rent increase was to take effect, we actually had Representative Delna Jones there in the conference. So you can say, if you want to look at it that way, she was acting as a citizen's representative. And she got no place either. So all they have to do under our present landlord-tenant laws in these discussions, so to speak, quotes, is sit there and look at you. And they, if a discussion says hello and goodbye, that's a discussion. So these are some of the reasons why we're, as far as I can see, this 2520-4 basically eliminates the ombudsman type of this. We're going all for the citizen's representative. And myself, like the previous speaker, or like Mr. Hansen, rather, I didn't even know about Pam Collins. In fact, I have her card in my pocket here right now. I met her in the foyer down here just before we came to this session. So there are a number of comments that I can make about that, but I don't think she can handle it, frankly. So this is the, unless this is set up as a separate situation that's capable of this and without bias, I keep coming back to that, because under the specifications for this person, if they're going to be experienced, they've got to have had some experience in mobile home parks, either as an operator or an owner or a resident. And whichever one it might be, it's not likely to be both. You've got a bias situation. That's about all I can say. Any questions?
Thank you for being so patient.
Okay.
We're going to recess the committee until 4:15, and at 4:15 we will reconvene with House Bill 2324, which is the civil commitment bill. Stand in recess.
And reopen the work session on 2324, which is a civil commitment bill. And we're going to attempt to work, as we were last time, through the civil commitment bill section by section. It's now 25 after 4. Some of us have to be back here at 6 o'clock to continue a different hearing. I intend to run till 5:30. Schedule this bill again next week, and we will put this bill back up as the first item on the agenda next week, and we will have a time block that will be sufficient for finishing the work session on this bill. Committee members, if you will look, you will see that we have Attorney General's opinions in regard to the expanded criteria section, section 5, if I recall, Council.
That's correct.
One dated April 27th, 1987, and we also had an earlier shorter AG's opinion, I believe written by the same person, Mr. Lawrence Young. And I'd ask, for the purposes of taking that section out of order and dealing with the civil commitment criteria, Mr. Young is here. We also have Ms. Streisinger, legal counsel for the governor. I've had a chance, and I suppose the committee members have had a chance to read those over. Mr. Young's legal expertise doubled in the second letter. I'd ask perhaps that both of those people come forward, and I know that Ms. Streisinger had some words to say concerning the governor's position on this matter. And Mr. Young, I'm not asking for a presentation from you, but perhaps there would be questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Corey Streisinger, Governor's Legal Counsel. I have also looked at Mr. Young's opinion letters, and I agree and have informed the governor that I agree with the conclusions reached in those letters. I think Mr. Young and I both feel that the approach presented by the alternative language would be a somewhat novel legal approach. It would require court tests. In this particular jurisdiction, those court tests would likely be unsuccessful, at least at the first several levels, and that ultimately, if we were to prevail, it would require a series of appeals, perhaps going to the United States Supreme Court. Mr. Young feels that ultimately we have a good chance of success. My personal view is that our chance of success is somewhat lesser. In any event, I have discussed this with the governor, and his position is that he does not favor enacting what would be a fairly controversial and litigious piece of litigation or piece of legislation, excuse me, with only potential for ultimate success. So he is opposed to this particular section being included in the legislation. He does continue to support the legislation and the funding for these programs.
Are there questions of Ms. Streisinger or Mr. Young? Representative Dix.
Does the governor have suggestions for another section rewritten?
I think I can respond to that, and perhaps the two of you can respond after I do. I think the new criteria presented by Mr. Young was the AG's best shot at it, and if there were other but better shots at it, we would have had them by now.
Mr. Chairman, it's also my understanding, I've advised the Mental Health Division that they may want to consider something much less than something that involves involuntary commitment to a state hospital. In other words, some form of outpatient treatment, which would, of course, necessitate a lesser infringement on the liberty interests of the patients, and therefore would be far more likely succeeding some sort of constitutional test.
Be that as it may, this chair would intend on working through a bill that is at least in the form of many, many hours, as Representative Kopetsky said, of 18 meetings of a task force that mental health was at the head of. And at this point in the structure of how this body runs, it's my intent to work through this bill with what we've got in the bill and what this committee sees within it that they would like to amend. But further questions? Thank you both.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bellamy.
Before, it's Corey. Are you the governor's legal counsel in general?
That's correct, Representative Bellamy.
I would ask that you leave. Oh, whoops, I got to get the right bill here. What was the last bill we were dealing with?
2520. Speaking to the mobile home ombudsman bill and the Dash 4 amendments?
Yes.
You're switching gears now on us.
Yes, I am. Before she leaves.
I'll close the work session on.
Well, I'm just going to ask her to do something, Mr. Chair. You really don't need to close the work session.
Sure.
I would ask you to review the legal ramifications of Section 7 or Section 6 in the Dash 4 amendments of 2520, if you would. No comment, just review, if you would.
Mr. Chair, if I might respond briefly.
Sure.
Representative Bellamy. As you probably know, I do, unfortunately, take my orders from the governor only, but I'll be glad to ask him if he'd like me to look into that. I just don't want to leave you with any misimpression as to type of questions I can respond to.
I should have. That should be shown in the record as a part of the inquiry on House Bill 2520. But we will continue in work session on 2324. Representative Dix.
I was just going to reiterate what Ms. Streisinger just pointed out. That she serves as the counsel to the governor, and Mr. Taylor and legislative counsel serve as counsel to this committee. In fact, Ms. Streisinger might have a different opinion as to Mr. Taylor with regard to a subject, and Mr. Taylor may have a different opinion, and legislative counsel might have a different opinion.
And Virginia Vanderbilt might even have a different opinion.
That's true. So, but she serves as the counsel for the governor, and certainly we could make that request to the governor, and then maybe he could see fit to have you review that section.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Taylor.
Sure.
Let's go back to the bill and fill us in on where we're at.
I try to tell you Section 39, but you've already told me you wouldn't believe that, so I believe we're in Section 13, so we left off.
It's not on the record.
Maybe we could ask Don Gray to come up, too, so we can use the tag team. Dr. Gray, yeah. Okay.
Dr. Gray. Where did I lose him? Dr. Gray.